Welcome to Life So Far. I'm Rich Bryan, and I sit down with everyday people from all different backgrounds to hear the wisdom and stories from their life so far. Thank you so much for stopping by, and I really hope you enjoy this next conversation.
Ryan, thanks so much for chatting, man.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you on a Tuesday night at, what time is it, 7:30 or something like that?
Yep.
In the new house, the new makeshift studio place to chat. But yeah, thanks for coming, man. I'm really excited about sitting down and learning more about your life so far. So I guess to kick it off, what do you reckon's been the greatest piece of advice you've ever received?
When you asked me about that, I was thinking about whether somebody, you know, pulled me aside that I really respected and, you know, changed my life with a few words. And honestly, the thing that stood out to me wasn't something that somebody told me, but it was something that I read, which was anything worth doing in life is worth underdoing.
Okay.
And I thought that's a weird reflection.
Say it again.
Anything worth doing in life is worth underdoing.
Underdoing. Yep. Okay, so unpack that.
Yeah, so sort of flies in the face of what we're normally told, but something that I think anyone out there who is a perfectionist or anyone who doesn't want to be too much of a risk taker, we want to know all the answers before we start stuff.
Yeah. Are you a bit of a perfectionist and non-risk taker?
Yeah, at times. And definitely when I'm most unsure about what the next step is, all of that stuff gets a little more intense. But I mean, it's the same as, I guess, anyone who is, who's sort of putting off doing that uni assignment or putting off that hard conversation or, you know, moving jobs or moving cities or whatever. You know, it's that challenge of going, I don't know how this is going to work out, so I won't start it.
Yeah.
I'll just kind of keep feeling around, waiting for that moment when I feel completely equipped, and then I'll do the thing and I'll do it perfectly.
Which happens never.
All the time you sort of delayed with that, and then you realize that, yeah, you look back in time and that decision that you kept putting off, you were never going to make that because you were never going to feel like you are at the point where you're ready to sort of jump in. So I think the idea of anything worth doing in life is worth underdoing is the idea that just start it. You know, even if you're not going to get it 100% the first time, just do it and do it poorly. And you guarantee that you will move that needle a little bit, you know. And that's been really helpful for me in work. In putting my hand to new hobbies, trying new stuff, you know, I want to learn how to skate. Well, I can't skate and I'm going to suck at it. So either I sit back and wait until I'm an expert on everything skating
just quickly
and then I'll pick up a board.
Yeah.
Or I can buy one and I can start trying, you know, and I can suck at it. But hey, you're moving that needle all the time. And that is something that I think as you sort of get to the back end of your 20s, is a great lesson to learn. Because I think as we get older, we sort of feel like it gets more embarrassing to be bad at stuff, right? We should start to have it all together at this stage. So that's been really pretty life-changing for me, actually, to accept that it's okay to do things poorly because at least you're doing them, you know, and you guarantee that you'll never start on anything if you wait until you feel fully equipped.
Yeah. What are some other examples that you've used that in your own life?
I think probably one of them recently was I was given the opportunity to go down to Sydney and do some work.
Okay.
And it kind of came out of the blue. It was a time sort of mid last year where obviously sort of COVID restrictions were in full swing. And I had moved on to, I've sort of been demoted and was doing a site job because we had limited work sort of with the construction company that I work for. And I got given this opportunity to go to Sydney and I was like, oh, it's a chance to actually do sort of the work that I've studied for at uni and I can stop pushing a broom around on site and actually, you know, do my job. But that was a point where I was like, I didn't really know enough about it. It was kind of like, do you want to move to Sydney? Yeah, the borders are shut at the moment, you know, and we can't promise you when you'll be coming back. Yeah. And we can't promise you what project you'll be working on. We just know that there's not much for you to do in Brisbane, and we're expecting there will be in Sydney.
So a lot of uncertainty.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so it was a chance to go, okay, I really don't know how this is going to turn out. I don't know if this is going to make me really unhappy. But I guarantee that I'll never know the answer to that if I don't just put up my hand and just take the next steps. The next step is just saying, hey, I'm interested. Mm. And the next step after that is saying, book me a flight, you know,
yeah,
get me accommodation, sort of figure this thing out one thing at a time. And it ended up being, you know, pretty amazing experience,
mm,
you know, to do that. But I think that, you know, a couple of years ago, if that had been brought to me, it would have just been put in the too hard box. Let somebody else figure that out. Yeah. Somebody who's more capable and more confident, you know. So
yeah, that's good. I think it's so applicable, hey, because I've heard that same advice. I really like the way that you said it, though, that if it's worth doing, it's worth undoing. Underdoing, not undoing. Yeah. that's a totally different conversation. But, like, I've heard it as in kind of like start before you're ready.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, that's something I've been so challenged with is kind of if I want to do something, just have a crack at it.
Hmm.
That's what I try and tell a lot of different people in all different, you know, skating's a perfect example. I used to skate and I was trying to get back into skating a couple of years ago with a good mate of mine.
Hmm.
And you watch, there's so many Instagram, you know, those, I get stuck in like skate loops on Instagram where you just watch skate things and it just keeps feeding you.
Because if you watch it and you give it like a few minutes, that algorithm knows and it just starts feeding it to you.
Yeah. I reckon I've watched like every New York skater do something on Instagram. Yeah. But you start getting in your head, oh, I'll just be like that when I get there. And then you go back to the skate park. And it's trash.
Yeah.
You're getting abused by little 4-year-olds on scooters and stuff.
And they rip sticks.
Yeah, but it's easy. And we gave up. Well, I gave up. And if I had just kept pushing through there, it would have, you know, I wouldn't have been a pro, I don't think.
Yeah. But
I would have been a lot further along than I am now, which is back at square one.
And ultimately the goal with the things we do as well, it's also not always the goal to be the best at everything we do. Yeah. Maybe we just do it because we enjoy it, you know. If we can't get satisfaction out of things unless we're perfect, we're never going to reach that level. Like, we're never going to ultimately feel like we can rest and enjoy the things we're doing.
Yeah.
And I think it's great to strive, you know, strive for that excellence in the things that matter and in your work and in your relationships. And we should always, you know, want to do the best we can. But if we're saying to ourselves, well, we're not going to be satisfied until it's at that level, we will live unfulfilled lives.
Exactly.
You know?
I think it's understanding that there is certain aspects, and it's a hard thing to say, but there is certain things in our life that it's okay to be mediocre at.
Yeah.
You know, and if it brings us joy in that moment, that's all that matters.
Yeah.
You know? And,
yeah.
There's certain things that we should try to be the best at. Like, I'm married. I think everyone should probably try and have the best marriage they can possibly have, or, you know, be the best friend, that sort of stuff. But, you know, if you want to go out and have fun skating, go and have it. You don't have to be the next Tony Hawk. Don't put that pressure on yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, you're not doing it to prove your value to anyone either. And sometimes it's just about, you know, letting yourself off the hook with that stuff and going, you know what, it's okay to be bad at things. If you know, if I'm enjoying it and it's bringing sort of value to my life, like, and it's a hobby, you know, go out there and be bad at it.
Yeah. You know? And the cool thing is the more that you go and be bad at something, the better that you'll get over time.
Exactly.
A lot of times, unless it's like intentionally trying to be bad at something. But
maybe you get really good at that. You know?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's true. You're like, you know, repetition is everything.
Yeah.
It's like kind of like 10,000 hours, but maybe to, you know, skate in an enjoyable way. We've turned this conversation into a big skateboarding conversation.
We have, somehow.
It's a good analogy.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you only need 10 hours of just kind of pushing through that, getting your balance, that sort of stuff, before you can cruise around a skate park and have fun.
Yeah.
It's probably another 10,000 hours before you become a pro. Yeah. Maybe you don't have to do that. Or who knows, if you enjoy it enough, you might just reach that 10,000 hours in 20 years and end up being pretty good at it.
Yeah. You know, so. Yeah, exactly. I think the important thing is just tearing down those barriers that stop us from trying stuff, you know, that, yeah, again, to bring it back to the age thing, I think as we get, you know, we get a little older, we start to tell ourselves no. It's really odd. We just sort of start to say, oh, no, I'm not the person that does that because I've never done it before.
Yeah.
There's like your skating is one of them, but then, man, there's a lot of amazing experiences out there. You know, there's a lot of amazing things that we can do with our time. And you see people who take on new hobbies and they try things and you ask them about it, and it's often that they just at some point just put their hand up and said, oh, yeah, I'll give it a shot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Before that point, they were never the person who did it, you know, but they've crossed that threshold now where it's they went from knowing nothing about it to knowing a little bit about it. And, hey, that not only has developed them as a person, it's given them depth, but it's also given them joy because they've tried something new. And I think most people get that level of satisfaction. It's like, I thought I was this person, and then I found out that I tried something new and I had fun doing it, you know, and they've again felt like they've grown as a person. And I think that that's such a healthy thing for us to feel that way. We shouldn't be feeling like our life is sort of shrinking in around us. Or that we have to be the person that we've always been because that's what people expect of us.
Mm. Yeah, that's really good. I really like that. That was a great, great way to start. I'm going to turn this conversation full circle, and I didn't prep you for this one, so all good. But what do you reckon has been your greatest struggle?
Greatest struggle? I think that one of the things, probably the hardest thing in my life, or the hardest period, was when my dad passed away. I wouldn't say that that is sort of an ongoing struggle for me, but I would say that in terms of feeling just fearful, that was probably a time of feeling a lot of fear, of feeling like, you know, I'd lost somebody who, you know, as my parent had been around the whole time I'd been alive, and I was just so worried about, he was this person who was so pivotal to me, and now that they weren't there, was that just going to be like, were they going to be the thread that had held everything together, and was everything going to be fundamentally different after that point? Was everything going to be harder and worse, and sort of joy being taken off the table, you know, because I'd gone from having somebody in my life who had been around for a lot of the best moments in my life to realizing that, you know, this is a bit sad, but sort of every new moment you had, every time you had a great achievement, it was never going to be as good or as perfect, because there was going to be that one person that was missing, and it was one of the people that that you want to share that with, you know. So that's been a tough experience, and it's been so much better than most people have had when they've lost a parent, because, you know, with my dad, we were good friends and we had a great relationship, and the, you know, the sadness was because I'd lost somebody that I cared about very much, not because of the things that weren't said or because there was some sort of hurt there. So I can only...
So you felt like you had a bit of closure in that kind of...
Yeah, I think there was a feeling that, you know, I think there was a feeling that I missed him very much, but there wasn't a feeling of sort of things that weren't resolved. But yeah, losing a parent is always a very hard thing, and it brings up sort of the deepest emotions and things that I had never felt before, and I didn't know that I was capable of feeling.
Yeah, I can't imagine. Must be horrendous. And that, as you say, like it is a sad thing, but I've never really thought of it from that point of view of like the moving forward, all those moments.
Yeah.
Now, like it's like he's not a part of that sort of thing. Well,
yeah. Yeah. I've definitely felt it probably most in those moments of like, you know, graduating university and sort of standing there and thinking the reason that I'm here right now is primarily because he suggested that I study, you know, at a time when I thought I don't really want to do that anymore. You know, I've studied, you know, all the way through grade 12 and I'd gone to do my cert 4 and I'd been studying for like 14 years and he was like, oh no, you should go to uni at a time when there was no pressure to do it. And I did, because it seemed like good advice, and it was good advice, but you know, wanted to shake his hand at the end of it all. And you can't, and that is hard.
Yeah.
Really, really hard.
What do you think is your best memory with him? I know we're getting really deep.
Yeah.
This is unexpected. I'm sorry.
No, that's right. I had a lot of great memories with Dad. There's sort of things that we would do as routines. You know, when we were kids, I remember one of the things that he would do often is, you know, he'd kind of pack us all in the car and we'd load the trailer up and we'd go off to the dump and it'd be like this family thing. And thinking back on it now, it's like, what was exciting about that? But it was at the time, you know, because he'd put it, you know, the music on really loud in the car and we'd dance and jump around. Mm. And it was just an adventure for us. It was like getting out of the house, you know.
The dump's also still one of the coolest places.
It was pretty loose back in the day, you know. Like you could just kind of wander around and do what you wanted.
Yeah.
But I remember a time when I was studying for an exam. An assignment that I needed to get done. And I'd been trying to pull it together for a while. And again, I think it was that perfection thing coming out where it was taking way too long. And I was letting it get it down to the wire. It was a Saturday. It was a Saturday to get it done. And then I had maybe till Sunday afternoon to get it submitted. And we'd been asked by a youth pastor at the time. Dad had a boat and he'd been asked to go to one of the youth camps and actually go out on the water and sort of tow like some tubes around, some people on water skis and just do some water sports with them. And he'd asked me about it a little while beforehand and I'd be like, yeah, I'm keen. But when it came down to it, I was just so busy. I was so stressed with my assignment. And he really pushed me to go with him because he didn't want to go on his own.
Yeah.
You know, he wanted me there with him. And, at the time, it was like, you've got to be kidding me right now. Like, I'm so stressed. And the thought of taking half a day to go, you know, to Somerset with you, it stresses me out even more. But his attitude was, I mean, ultimately, he just wanted me to spend time with him. But he was like, you know what? Your assignment will still be there when you're done. It's just one assignment, Ryan. How bad could it be? I was like, it feels like my whole life's depending on this right now. But I said yes and spent the day with him out on the water and it was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it was amazing because I was in a place at that time where, you know, it was kind of just uni was just all I could see, you know, I had no peripheral vision at all. And I had sort of envisioned my weekend being this very really stressful thing and it was going to all be about that. And I was going to, you know, sit in my room with my door locked and not, you know, communicate with anyone and just be kind of, just be sad and stressed on my own. But to get pulled out and to go to a beautiful place like Somerset and spend the day on the water with my dad and just, you know, it was such a good surprise. And, you know, that was a time when I was still living at home and I didn't realize that he wasn't going to be around, you know, in a couple of years. Mm. But I think about it now, you know, kind of reflectively and realize that That's a great memory. And I could have sat there doing the thing that was seemed like the most important thing in the moment, but it was just a thing, you know, and people are always more important than that. And I'm so glad I did, because it was just better for everyone. You know, it's better for me. I mean, I came back and I, you know, did my assignment and I handed in and it was fine.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, it was the best thing I could do in that moment was just spend time with my dad, you know, and,
That's so cool.
I think that, yeah, I think that, you know, I would do it, you know, every single opportunity I got again. I mean, I definitely wouldn't change that any time. And I would have traded out a lot of time studying and spent more time with him, you know, if I could have it back.
Yeah. So, hindsight's a wonderful thing, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. It's, yeah, it's good not to get too caught up in that actually.
Yeah.
Because that can be a bit of a dark place to be. But no, sure. Definitely, I appreciate the times that I think he kind of pushed me to get a bit of perspective, spend some time with him.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah.
What are you most excited about now in your life?
I am excited about potentially the option to travel again.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're slowly getting there, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, it seems like it's gone from being something that the only barrier was funds to now there's a whole bunch of barriers in the way.
Sometimes physical,
yeah.
Which is scary.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm excited about that. Yeah. I don't know how soon that's going to happen.
Where do you want to travel to first?
I'd love to travel to Spain. It's been on the list for a while. I've had some friends who've gone there. I had a mate who lived in Europe for a couple of years. And while he was there working, you know, he did a lot of traveling. And, you know, he talked about a lot of places that he'd been when we worked together. But every time he talked about Spain, he just lit up. You know,
yeah.
He just loved it. And everything he told me about it was so exciting. So I'd love that. But there's heaps of great places to travel in Australia as well.
It's yeah. a massive country.
Yeah. It's yeah. awesome. I mean, I think people, you know, who haven't done it probably think mainly about Melbourne and Sydney, you know, as destinations, but
yeah.
there's a lot of country in between.
Yeah. It's Denny's cousin. She lives in Mount Isa, and we chatted, caught up with her on the weekend, and
yep.
she's looking at moving down to Melbourne. And I was like, oh, that's a long way away from Brisbane, though. And she's like, it's the same distance from
yeah.
Brisbane to Melbourne than it is to Mount Isa, which is in Queensland still, for people listening who don't know much about Queensland. But that just blows my mind how yeah. massive, not even just our country is, Australia, but just Queensland in general.
Yeah.
It's freaking enormous.
Yeah, it's huge. Have you spent any time in North Queensland at all?
I've been as far north as a place called Laura and Cooktown up that way. So
yep.
when I was a Sparky back in the day, part of my fourth year apprenticeship was every Queensland government school, they put solar panels. I think it was part of some
yep.
green initiative
yep.
thing.
And yep.
we didn't.
They're doing a whole rebate around that.
Yeah, there's yep. something. And then they needed like this little modem, which had a silly name. It was called a hottie. And that you, someone had to go and connect all the data cables up, plug it in, and then the kids could plug in and they could see their solar usage and that sort of stuff. And
yep.
assignments. So I got given a ute full of hotties, not the hotties I wanted when I was a 18-year-old hot-blooded male. But I went out and did that, and yeah, just me and a ute. And there's a bunch of us that did it, but it was kind of on our own, and went as far as Cooktown and as west as like Winton. So kind of that whole area. So
yeah.
I've seen a bit, but I've, you know, you see it, get in there, do your work, drive 5 hours, next one.
Yeah.
So I haven't really seen it. I've seen it through the eyes of a 18-year-old who just wants to come home.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's different when you're there for work as opposed to travel when,
yeah.
I don't know, you're more open to, like, whatever situations may come along.
Yeah, it's definitely a beautiful place, though. Even just driving yeah. along, you're like, this isn't... Because I had this idea in my head that as soon as you go, like, 2 hours out of Brisbane, it becomes, like, the desert.
Yeah. You're in the Simpsons.
It really doesn't.
That's it.
Like, even when you end up, like, even as far out as, say, I was at Winter not long ago, which is, what's that? I think it's a good 10 hours west or something.
Yeah.
It's still not full desert. It's kind of like scrubby land and trees and stuff. So, man, it's a lot. It's a big country.
Yeah. And there's people out here?
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly.
Just living their lives?
Oh, it's incredible, hey.
Yeah.
It's, and real, like the work I do now is kind of mental health and allied health for outback Queenslanders. And, man, they're battlers. Man, it's a tough life out there.
Yeah, it's definitely a different situation.
Yeah.
We, the first time I went sort of further north than Rocky was with my band, and we were doing a sort of Australia-wide tour. We'd been to Melbourne, which had been pretty cold. It was sort of, I think it was January at that point, sort of just into the new year. And then we decided we were going to go up for the first show, so we went all the way up to Cairns, and we got up there, and it was super tropical, and it was so hot.
Yeah.
And we couldn't afford hotel rooms because it was a long tour, and it was like the idea of spending money on hotel rooms, just we wouldn't make any money at all.
Yeah. What's the name of the band, before we forget?
Young Lions.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
The news, I listened to a song on the radio that popped up. Did I tell you this? Song popped up on the radio, and I was like, this song is banger, and I Shazammed it.
Oh, no way.
And it was Young Lions.
Oh,
so there you go.
That's so good.
How good you guys are.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome.
Anyway, continue your story.
Yes.
So you're a guitarist of that band, though.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So we were pretty excited because we were about to do our longest sort of tour that we'd ever done. It was like 30 dates or something. And we took a plane up there, picked up the hire car. We had taken this tent with us, and we're like, we're going to camp in this sort of teepee-style tent.
It's full on.
It's like this canvas tent, and we've done a lot of touring with this thing. It's, you know, sort of battled through the elements, but it's huge. It's like a 12-person,
right,
you know, teepee-style tent, and weighs like 30 kilos. You can just get it in on a plane, you know, without sort of them telling us to pay extra for the baggage.
So this is the actual reality of being in a touring band.
Oh, yeah, it's glamorous. Yeah. And so we got up there. We couldn't fit all of our bags into this van that we got given. So we sort of drove down to the local Repco with this canvas tent across our laps, picked up some ratchet straps, and just threw it on top of the roof of the car. And there were no roof racks or anything, so we had to, like, wind the windows down on it and just ratchet strap it through the windows. And then there were sliding doors on the van too, so you couldn't open the doors. Everyone had to pile in. You shut the doors, roll the windows down, and then just loop the ratchet straps through the window. You know, so it was good that we didn't have, like, you know, a car accident or anything, because nobody would have been able to get out of the thing. Nah. But we set our tent up on the first night, and we went down to sort of this local watering hole. And it was just intensely hot. And it was like, if you're outside, you might get some breeze, but it was all flies just everywhere. And then you go back and sit in the tent, and it was just boiling, and it felt like time had just slowed, you know.
A bunch of sweaty blokes sitting in a tent.
Bunch of sweaty boys in a tent. It was not a good situation. And then around 2 a.m. it started raining, and it did not stop, and we got completely flooded.
Oh.
We were actually sitting there in our campsite just watching the water, like, encroach on our tent. We went out onto the road, and there was so much water rushing under the road. You could actually stand on the bitumen, and you could see it, like, it was like a trampoline. You could see the water, like, ripple out in every direction.
Full on.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
But, you know, the water's receded, and we managed to make our first show, so,
part of it.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the band for a moment, actually. That's a good topic. So, like, we've known each other for a long time, both musicians. We were in a short-lived little band.
I think That's right.
You remember that?
Yeah, I do.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
I think we lasted 2 days or something before it just didn't end up.
Get it off the ground, eh?
No. I reckon there was potential there.
There definitely was. I think we were in that difficult period where it was like, you know, a lot of people who are in the church scene who are Christians, they play music, and that's great. When you have the outlet of church to play music at, everything else seems so hard.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you know, you're telling me that I need to, like, go to a venue where I can't park, you know, in the city, and I'm going to have to lug all my gear around and set up, and it's probably not going to sound great.
Yeah.
It's a lot of effort, and, you know,
it comes back to what we're talking about. You kind of have to.
You have to want it.
And you have to suck at the start as well, don't you? Like, oh, you have to be okay with that.
That is the perfect example.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's really hard. It's very daunting starting out and everything meaning so much and not having any material, and everyone's sitting there like, this better be worth my time. Yeah. And you're like, I don't know. Like,
yeah.
I can't promise you that. We've just got to do it.
Yeah.
You know, we've got to suck at it until we don't anymore.
For me as a musician, one of my biggest dreams was always to be in a touring band.
Hmm.
And it kind of didn't happen. You know, I was in a couple of bands and we didn't really get anywhere. Mainly same things. It was just, we started off going really well, then someone would pull out and then it would all fall apart. But you've managed to do this. So have you always had that goal of, you've always wanted to, has that been a big dream of yours?
Yeah, definitely. I think probably from the age of like 14, 15.
Yeah.
You know, we came from a family where my mum played piano, dad wasn't musical, loved music. He probably opened, you know, my eyes to good music probably more than anyone else, sort of at probably until I was like 20 or something. Mm. But again, I sort of came from that place where up until I was 13, 14, it was like, well, I'm not musical. I can't play.
Yeah.
You know? And I think a lot of people are like that. You know, you feel like this is a binary thing where you either are or you aren't. But so many of my mates played, you know, and multiple instruments, like they could play drums and they would play a bit of guitar and do a bit of this. And, you know, it wasn't even like they were amazing at it, but it was just that they could.
Yeah.
And then, you know, one of my mates pulled me aside and started teaching me a little bit. And it was like, oh, you can kind of do this, you know, like it's so satisfying. It's so satisfying when you first pick it up and you play something that you know, actually sounds like something, you know, and when you can actually like learn a song to the level where it sounds like the thing that you're trying to play, it's a great feeling,
yeah.
You know, and I still
it's a huge love sense that. Of accomplishment. Isn't
oh,
it?
I still love yeah. it. You know, if you can learn a piece of music and it goes from being this thing that it's kind of abstract and confusing and you don't really know how they're doing it, to where you can replicate it and it sounds right, that's a great feeling.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But that definitely sort of from that age, thinking about playing music, I was never really interested in pulling a guitar out to impress people around a campfire. Like, it was always about being in a band. It was always about that teamwork and, you know, being better. The sum of, you know, the parts being greater than them individually. And being able to sort of take the things that you practiced privately or you wrote privately and actually like put them out into the world and play them for people and see people enjoy them and connect with them, like that was always a passion, you know. And it's been great to, like, there was a point where I thought that it, you know, I wasn't really going to get the chance to do it anymore because, you know, the first band that I was in, you know, we took it pretty seriously. But after, you know, a year or so, it just kind of fizzled out as it does. And I did think it had come off the table. So I feel very blessed to have been given the opportunity to actually do it properly.
So how did that opportunity come about, if you don't mind talking about it? So, like, well, I guess what I'm trying to get out of here is, for me, I feel like I've missed an opportunity. Like, I probably had a bunch of opportunities to kind of get into bands that now that I look at them go, every other person in that it was actually fully committed.
Hmm.
But at the time I'd been not is a too strong a word, but discouraged, I guess, by those kind of failed attempts. And I went, you know what? I think I'm beyond that now. It's time to move on to something else. But I still, that's probably one of my regrets, is I still look back and go, man, should have had a crack at that.
Yeah.
The opportunity that you've got. So you quite easily could have just gone, oh, you know what? I've had enough now. I'm doing my own thing in the construction world, which is fantastic. I'll just keep playing in my spare time. That's about it. Talk about, was it just kind of something that came out of the blue where they're like, Ryan, we want you? Or did you have to kind of work your way into that space?
Yeah. So the first band that I was in, we you know, sort of did that thing where we went through a few members and we sort of had those teething issues where I was like trying to find people who were, you know, as committed as we were or as we wanted them to be. And we went through a couple drummers. And the last one we got on board was a guy who kind of approached us out of the blue. He was involved with a festival that we'd played at and he wanted to manage us. He just was doing his degree at that stage in music management. He was like, I'll be a, you know, your agent or whatever,
yeah,
whatever I can do to help out. And we were like, well, okay, well, this thing's barely off the ground. And as big as our dreams were as like, you know, 18-year-olds about how we're going to change the world, we were like, we don't need a manager. Like, we are not at that level. Like, yeah. Everything's word of mouth. It's just all friends, you know, that are getting us, you know, opportunities to play. So I remember the guitarist came to me with this guy. He's like, this guy, Matt, wants to manage us. And I was like, I don't see any value there. He was like, but he is a drummer. And I was like, say what? He's a drummer. So it was perfect because it was like, well, that's what we need.
Yeah.
We're not even a band at the moment because we don't have one.
Yeah.
So we got this guy, Matt, on board and it was great. And that was the point sort of early in the piece with the first band where it was like everyone was on the same page. We all had the same vision, you know. And as that kind of that drew to an end, that first band, he got an opportunity to join Young Lions. They had written their first album. And I think they just realized that their drummer just could not play live the stuff that he played in the studio. Like, he'd had a little bit of help in there. Yeah, he'd had some help. And
must be a tough space to be in as a musician, though, when that happens.
Yeah. And there were some big changes that happened there where the guys, they basically wrote an album before they did any shows. And by the time they actually, you know, had sort of finished that album up, they'd already had massive changes with the members. Mm. Like the singer, they kicked the singer out.
Right.
Yeah.
It's hard to tour an album with a different singer.
Well, yeah. See, they kicked him out. They recorded all the vocals, I believe, and then they kicked him out before they released it because they're like, these vocals are no good. Oh, no. Got a new singer in. So Matt got an opportunity to play with that band and he was with them for a couple of years and they were doing their thing and it was, you know, more professional than anything I'd ever been involved with. And then we ended up being housemates, Matt and I. And so I was aware, you know, that they'd let one of their guitarists go and that, you know, that they were looking sort of at making some potential changes there. And I think at that time their bassist had even been thinking about quitting and I'd been seriously thinking I'll buy myself a bass guitar and learn just to do it, just to recommend myself for this.
Yeah. Should have called me, mate.
I could have. Yeah. We could maybe do something now.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
You know, first band with two bassists.
Yeah. If you're listening, guys.
So there was a time where it actually was just a really logical choice, I think, for them because they were looking for somebody to fill in. And my mentality sort of in between all these bands had been, I really care about this. I really want to play music. So I will just say yes to every opportunity to play music that I get. Yeah. And I made that commitment to myself. So playing a lot of church services and a lot of stuff in between just to play.
Yeah.
You know, and just to get better.
That's a super important point. We don't touch on it too long, but saying yes, going, okay, this is what I want to do. Now I need to say yes to all the opportunities that may not look like, you know, you can't just wait for that opportunity where they're going to, saying yes to the ones where they go, come on, warp tour with me or something.
Mm.
You just say yes to every opportunity that you think is going to get you towards that goal or dream.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, definitely. And it was the point where they asked me to play the first show where I was like, okay, you know, this music's very different to what I've been playing and I had to learn a whole bunch of stuff and sort of change my approach because it's a different style of music. But it was easy. It was much easier than it would have been if I hadn't sort of taken those steps the whole way through. So it was like, you know, do you want to play the show with us? Well, yeah, cool. I've got an amp, I've got a guitar, you know, I've got pedals. I'm ready to roll in terms of that. You know, you're prepping yourself on all of like the stuff that's not so sexy.
Yeah.
So that when the opportunity comes along, all of that stuff's out of
you can say,
you know, out of sight, out of mind. You know, you don't need to be fumbling over the basics because you've done that in the background when it hasn't mattered as much. And it's been a good thing. And it just went from there, really. We did the sort of did a bit of filling in for some shows to begin with, and then there was a point where I think everyone just agreed, hey, this is working, so let's keep doing it. You know, and I've loved it. And it's been one of the hard things about all the restrictions recently has been obviously not playing as much. So, you know, we had a chance to play a show a few months back and it was great. It felt like coming home, you know, just getting on stage and just, you know, kind of being there with your brothers playing music again. It's like, oh, this is what we've missed.
Yeah, that's good.
You know,
that's so cool. So would you say that that's your, I don't know if you have big, big long-term goals or dreams or something, but would you say that that would be your ultimate dream is to do that, be doing that full-time in a touring band full-time?
That would be amazing. Yeah, no doubt that would be amazing. I think it's the same for a lot of musicians where nobody would want to do that for forever, you know, because it's a trade-off. Like if you're traveling, then you're away from the people you care about. And life at home kind of gets put on hold for that stuff. So I think I would never say it's like my dream to do that for forever.
Yep.
You know, put me on a stage every single night for the rest of forever. Like, no, thank you. No, thanks. But again, it's just about the opportunity to break from that norm where it's like you're doing your work and you've got your day to day, which is good and it gives you that stability. But then to have the opportunity, you know, to jump on a plane and go to a different city and play a show.
Yeah.
And even do that as like a weekend thing, you know, and come back on the Monday and be back in Brisbane. It is exhausting, but there's something so exciting about that because it's just a break from the routine of it all.
You see it as a bit of an escape.
Definitely.
For yourself, yeah.
Definitely. And you're out doing something creative, which is a good escape from like the construction stuff because it doesn't lend itself to creativity as much. Yeah. You know, it's far away from a creative industry. So
yeah.
It's a good balance of the two.
Great.
Yeah.
Awesome. Now this has been so good. Let's finish up with one more question. I don't think this is one that I prepped you with.
Oh.
But you've nailed all of them. So if you had to give a piece of advice to me or people listening or watching, what would be one piece of advice do you reckon you would give us?
My advice would be to be honest. I have found that that's a really powerful thing. Like to be a person who is honest and a person of integrity is not always the easiest thing to do. But you set yourself up for, I think you set yourself up, I wouldn't say for success, it's not a life hack, but I think you set yourself up to be a person that is content, you know. So if you can be honest with the way that you deal with people, you're honest in your work, you know, you bring integrity to everything you do. And you're not perfect about it. Nobody is. But you're always trying for that. You're always striving for that. You get your hard conversations out of the way when you need to. You don't put that stuff off.
Yeah.
And you ultimately are the same person. Every room that you're in, you're not faking it.
Which is so freeing.
It is. It can be hard at the start, I think, because somebody who is honest is not going to always tell everyone what they want to hear. They're not always going to be the life of the party. They, you know, may not get away with as much, and you may see people around you being more successful because, because they lie about things or they twist things or they manipulate people or whatever. But if you can be a person who's honest in everything that you do, you will never put yourself in a position where you are a fraud.
Yeah.
And I think that that's really important as everyone kind of grows into who they are. And I think as I grow into who I am, to realize that I'm not leaving a trail of lies behind me. You know, I feel like, you know, it's a tricky thing sometimes, being a Christian in a world, or not in a world of, but engaging with people of different beliefs and sort of, being in a workplace that's, you know, I don't know any other Christians that in my work, you know, you've just got to be sort of an authentic person who has integrity.
Mm.
And that is, you set yourself up for sort of a harmonious experience when you do that. Mm.
That's great.
Yeah.
That is great advice.
I don't think it's earth-shattering, but I have found that it has
I don't know. I don't want to sell yourself short. I think it's so important because I think you can have a lot of bunch of rah-rah advice or all good advice, but if you're not honest and if you're burning all those relationships, if you're constantly caught up stressed that this group of people is going to figure out that I actually am like this with this group of people or this relationship, they're going to figure out that I'm also doing something in this relationship, I think all that other stuff, your life just starts to crumble. So I think I think it is earth shattering, like in that I think it's a core piece of advice.
Yeah.
I think if you don't have that, it's hard to then implement any other pieces of advice.
Yeah. I think we live in a sort of time where everyone's selling something. And maybe this is the way it's always been, you know, that everyone's always selling something. But, you know, it's easy to feel like everyone's out there to get something for themselves, to win in every situation. Life's a game, and you know, the smartest person or the hardest person or the person who cares least about everyone else always wins that. And that is probably true in a small snapshot. But if you can, you know, if you can bring that honesty and integrity to everything you do, you won't win every situation, but you will be that even person in every situation that's always the same.
Yeah.
And you'll never be looking behind you worried about who's coming after you or what's catching up with you.
Yeah.
You know? And to do that, you set yourself up well if you do that, because yeah, you're not looking over your back. And you're not having to be, you know, super conscious about, am I being the person that people expect me to be, and will they like me if I'm something different, and, you know, what hat am I wearing right now, and who am I trying to be for everyone else? Like, we should be trying to leave all of that behind and care about other people and be people of integrity. So.
So good. How old are you again?
29.
You're wise before your time. And I guess as we finish, like, that's probably one thing I would encourage you with is, like, I've always found when we've had conversations, and this is something I really admire about you, because not many other people are like this, I find, that we will see each other wherever we see each other, and we always start, the conversation gets deep pretty quick. Have you noticed that as well?
Like, yeah.
And I think you are a deep thinker, and you are somebody who just kind of like, I don't know if you like small talk. I don't really like small talk that way much, but
no,
I like, and I admire that you do think about this stuff, and you're like a quiet thinker, I find. I don't know how to explain that, but
yeah.
And I just want to encourage you, keep doing that, because you are, when I say you're wise before your time, I don't have any metrics on whether that's correct or not. But in this conversation, I'm like, you have a lot to offer to the world, not just musically, but just in the way that you think and the way that you portray yourself. So this has been awesome, man.
Yeah, thank you.
I loved it. Sorry about throwing some of those curveball questions at you.
That's fine.
Stood the test.
Just know it's real then, you know?
Yeah. All the other ones are just decoy questions.
So yeah.
No, so thanks, man. This has been awesome. Everybody, I'm sure you got a lot out of it. I did. There's a lot of takeaways. I really liked that piece of advice you gave at the start, which was, if it's worth doing, it's worth underdoing. So think about that in your own life. I'm definitely going to keep that going when it comes to doing this podcast, be more regular, and it doesn't have to be perfect every time. But if I get to have chats like this, none of it matters. So, well, nothing else matters. This matters a lot. So, guys, thank you so much for listening. Ryan, thanks again for chatting.
Thank you.
I'm going to put Young Lions in the description of this one, because you should all go and check them out, because they're a really cool band. And you're the lead guitarist.
That's right, yeah.
So listen for that. Anyway, thanks, guys, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
I really hope you enjoyed that last conversation. If you're watching on YouTube or listening on Spotify, it would mean the absolute world if you liked and subscribed or left a positive comment. I know you've heard this all before, but these things really do help the channel grow. Thank you so much for your support, and I'll see you in the next episode.